The court will proceed to the fourth case, the United States v. Cox. Mr. McCullough.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The indictment in this case has two fatal defects. First, it misstated the law, and second, it failed to allege the elements of an 846 conspiracy. On the first point, the indictment told my client, Seth Cox, that in order to convict him, the government would need to prove three things at trial. In fact, it only had to prove one. This kind of error deprives a defendant of the chance to make informed decisions about how to plead and how to defend himself at trial. For that reason alone is constitutionally insufficient. Although the government argues otherwise, this indictment does not fall within the pleading rule laid out in O'Neill and affirmed by this court in cases such as Ledon and Moore, because this indictment does not just allege conduct, but rather purports to state the law. In every case cited by the government, the form of the indictment is the same. It alleges that the defendant did X, Y, and Z. But in this indictment, it says that the law is X, Y, and Z. So looking at the face of this indictment, a reasonable defendant who believes that the government could not prove he conspired to distribute methamphetamine is likely to make different decisions about how to plead and how to defend himself at trial. Because it's likely to make that kind of difference, the error in this indictment cannot be a technical one under the binary scheme laid down by the Supreme Court in Russell, but rather must be the kind of error that goes to the central function of an indictment. So I think this is where I just say QED and sit down, but I won't, because there's another error in the indictment, namely that it fails to allege the elements of Section 846. The Supreme Court in Shabani said that 846 requires proof of both the existence of an agreement and the decision by the defendant to join the agreement. This indictment quite obviously doesn't expressly allege those elements, but neither can it be said to have alleged them in context. A good example of a case in which the indictment did allege an element in context is the Frank Smith case, on which panel two of your honors sat. There, the indictment failed expressly to allege scienter in a case about employing minors in furtherance of a drug conspiracy or drug scheme. And this court held that, nevertheless, the indictment was sufficient because the words employ, induce, and entice necessarily imply scienter on the part of the defendant. There's nothing like this in the conspiracy, in a simple accusation that someone conspired. There's no way from that word alone to understand that there are these two elements to an 846 conspiracy. Now, even if neither of these two arguments, even if this court doesn't think that either of those two arguments alone merit vacator, we have an alternative argument, namely that in any event, this court should remand for resentencing. The district court, in finding a two-level enhancement for weight attributable to Mr. Cox, relied on testimony that was woefully insufficient in terms of its reliability, namely the testimony of Audie Weir. Weir admitted that he was manufacturing and using methamphetamine regularly for several years, that he didn't remember how frequently he cooked, how many times he cooked, that he didn't remember a lot of details about his time as a methamphetamine cook, maybe because he was high, maybe for other reasons. The district court noted that he was not the most trustworthy witness, although it did ultimately credit him with not lying. But even if Mr. Weir didn't lie on the stand, his testimony was too unreliable, both because of his lack of memory and also too unspecific, because he could only give sort of broad ranges of how often he thought he might have cooked meth, you know, about how much meth he sometimes cooked. And this evidence was insufficient under the preponderance standing to find an enhancement that effectively put Mr. Cox in jail for an extra 8 years or so.
Is it your belief then that, as far as your first point, that Mr. Cox only had to, I not say prove, but the government had to prove all three, and if he could sidestep one, say manufacturing, definitely possessed but didn't manufacture, then that should get him off the hook?
I'm saying, Your Honor, that that's what the indictment says. The indictment says that...
Even though the statute says otherwise.
That's right, Your Honor. The question, though, when it comes to the sufficiency of the indictment, that can be tested on the face of the indictment alone. We don't have to look at what may have happened at trial. The important thing to notice is that the language of the indictment tells Mr. Cox, told Mr. Cox, and would tell any other defendant in his shoes that he needed to be, that the government needed to prove that he conspired to do each of the three things that follows the apposition, that is.
Should the indictment have been challenged right out, said that it's not correct?
I think it should have been, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And it should have been. The defense should have challenged it. The government should not have prosecuted under it, and the district court should not have given judgment under this indictment. And that's exactly why on appeal there's a liberal construction given to the indictment. But we contend that there's no reasonable reading of this indictment in which it can be said not to have misinformed Mr. Cox about the state of the law. If Your Honors have no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Hertzler.
Thank you again. I don't know that there's any need for rebuttal. I believe our brief addresses all of these issues adequately, so unless the court has questions of me, I will return my time to the court. I know you fell behind time by having some of the other counsel take more than their share early this morning.
Well, we appreciate the return of time, but you should feel under no obligation to do that.
I think our brief addresses the issues. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hertzler. Well, with nothing to rebut, I first of all want to thank all counsel and add an additional thanks to the law school, to Professor Mikva, Mr. Huber, and Mr. Bukala for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Cox in this appeal. We genuinely appreciate the acceptance of these cases, and it means a lot to the court.
Judge Mikva and I are contemporaries, and it's nice to see him looking so healthy. I feel better already.
Case is taken under advisement.